Today is Friday, October 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Coming up, the United States says it will leave more troops and materials in Syria to ward off the Islamic State group.
But the mission in Syria remains what the mission in Syria began with. It's always been about defeating the ISIS coalition.
Also ahead, the U.S. Justice Department says an examination of the origins of the Russia probe has become a criminal investigation, and Brexit may be on hold, at least for now. Those stories and more are all coming up next. Pentagon Chief Mark Esper says the United States will leave more American troops and armored vehicles in eastern Syria to help prevent Islamic State militants from gaining access to oil fields controlled by U.S.-allied Syrian Kurds.
We are now taking some actions. I'm not going to get into the details. To strengthen our position at Dar Azar, to ensure that we can deny ISIS access to the oil fields, because we want to make sure that they don't have access to the resources that may allow them to strike within the region, to strike Europe, to strike the United States.
And joining us now is VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb. Carla, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper says he wasn't going to go into details, but what details can you share with us about the United States' plan to have troops and materials guard those oil fields?
Well, Secretary of Defense Mark Esper did describe an added force as, quote, mechanized. And, you know, when I hear the word mechanized, as somebody who's been reporting for years at the Pentagon, I think of two things. I think of tanks, and I think of other combat vehicles that are armored, like these Bradley armored infantry carriers that we have. So those forces are going to need so much logistical support in order to bring those in. If that were to happen, potentially, we could be bringing in the same number of U.S. troops, potentially more U.S. troops than were even taken out of Syria in recent days. So it's very confusing as to whether or not that will play out in the coming days when we have a president who is very focused on getting the majority of the troops out of Syria. So as fast as everything is changing, I don't want to say that's the plan, but that's the plan today.
Well, again, the plan was originally for the troops to come out completely, but then they were going to be diverted to Iraq, at least in a transitional type role. So those
Let me stop you real quickly there, because the United States was always going to keep a small force,
right,
about 200, down in Al-Tanf, down in the bottom of Syria. But yes, you are correct. We were going to move troops out to western Iraq. Then that shifted to, well, we may not keep them in Iraq, but we're going to keep them in the area and bring a few of the troops home, potentially a pandering to President Trump, maybe. And then there was a realization that the oil fields need to be secured because Iranian influence could try to take over the fields. Islamic State could potentially try to take over these fields for revenue. So then this plan is now going underway where they're supporting the Kurds now, they're supporting the Syrian Democratic Forces now, and they're thinking about bringing in additional U.S. troops.
I know things are pretty scant on details, but with potentially these logistical additions be in addition to the 1,000 or so troops that were going into Iraq originally?
Well, so it is confusing, and the United States doesn't like to talk about the specific numbers for force protection, because if Islamic State or if the Iranians or if someone knew exactly how many U.S. troops were there, they may feel emboldened to attack some more. But let's say that there were about 1,000. The majority, as I understand it, were still in after the United States put out a convoy of troops over into western Iraq and evacuated some from that safe zone where the Kurds and where the Turks had agreed to have a safe zone. So those forces were moved out. But if the majority were still there, we're still looking at a few hundred troops in Syria. And then if a few hundred more are brought in, that's where I'm telling you we may end up with the same number back in, trying to protect these oil fields now instead of trying to be at the very tip top at the north near the border.
VOA's Carla Babb reports for us from the Pentagon. Carla, thanks for coming on, and hope you have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Why did the FBI open a counterintelligence investigation into the Trump campaign in the summer of 2016? AP correspondent Rita Foley reports that is the question at the heart of a fierce debate between Republicans and Democrats.
Donald Trump went on to win the presidential election that year. He calls the investigation a witch hunt. Now, the Justice Department reportedly is launching a criminal investigation of its own 2016 probe into the Trump campaign. We don't know what potential crimes are being investigated. Two Democrats who are leading the impeachment inquiry, Congressman Adam Schiff and Jerry Nadler, say they worry now that the Justice Department under President Trump has lost its independence and become a vehicle for President Trump's political revenge. Rita Foley, Washington.
An Indonesian report says the Lion Air jet crashed due to aircraft design flaw, among other factors. The AP's Charles de la Desma reports.
The investigation has found the flight that plunged a year ago into the Java Sea just 13 minutes after its takeoff, killing 189 people, was dogged in a number of ways, as well as poor design, inadequate training, and maintenance problems featured. The final accident report says the pilots were never told how to quickly respond to malfunctions of the Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet's automatic flight control system, known as MCAS. Also, the aircraft had had problems on its last four flights, including one the day before its fatal accident. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Samsung Group heir J.Y. Lee attended his first hearing of his bribery retrial on Friday. Lee could be facing more time in prison after South Korea's top court ordered a review of his 2017 graft case. Lee is accused of giving bribes to South Korea's former president, Park Geun-hye. He was originally sentenced to 5 years in prison, but after an appeals court ruled on his case, his sentence was suspended and he walked free after only 2.5 years. A number of protesters were injured and one was killed in Baghdad as security forces used tear gas and stun grenades to repel demonstrators. The death comes as an Iraq government committee investigating the wave of unrest found that 149 civilians were killed when security forces used excessive force and fired on protesters. That's according to a report seen by Reuters News. In it, the report details how more than 70% of the deaths were caused by shots to the head or chest. Hundreds of Lebanese protesters set up tents blocking traffic in main thoroughfares and sleeping in public squares Friday to enforce a civil disobedience campaign and keep up the pressure on the government to step down. Lebanon's Hezbollah leader says nationwide protests against the country's political class are being exploited by politicians and are no longer popular or spontaneous. Torrential rain caused flooding Friday in towns east of Tokyo, prompting new concerns in areas still recovering from recent typhoons. Muddy water spilled from a river in Chiba, where pedestrians waded through waist-deep floods. A highway toll gate near Narita International Airport was temporarily closed for safety as well. No casualties or damage has been reported. Representatives of Russia, China, and the United States, as well as Pakistan, have agreed that negotiation is the only road to peace in Afghanistan, including an early resumption of direct U.S. talks with the Taliban. In addition, police investigating the deaths of 39 people found a truck in London said that they had arrested two additional people on suspicion of human trafficking on Friday. Reuters' Amir McCarthy reports.
Two people were arrested on Friday on suspicion of human trafficking following the deaths of 39 people found in a truck in Essex, east of London, on Wednesday. A 38-year-old man and woman were detained in northwest England on suspicion of conspiracy to traffic people and of 39 counts of manslaughter. British police said they believed the victims were Chinese, and China's embassy in London said it had sent a team to Essex. This as China called on Britain to seek severe punishment for those involved in the deaths. Police say they are continuing to question the 25-year-old driver of the truck, who is yet to be formally identified as a murder suspect. A source familiar with the investigation named him as Mo Robinson from the Portadown area of Northern Ireland. The refrigeration unit had travelled to Britain from Zeebrugge in Belgium. The town's chairman said he believed the victims died in the trailer before it arrived in the Belgian port. Private ambulances were seen at Tilbury Docks on Friday as post-mortem examinations get underway in a bid to determine how exactly the 31 men and 8 women died. Forensic experts will seek to identify the deceased, something police warned would be a lengthy process. China's Global Times, published by the ruling Communist Party's official People's Daily, said in a Friday editorial that Britain should bear some responsibility for the deaths.
And that was Reuters reporter Amir McCarthy. Science
in a minute.
A new study by researchers at Penn State College of Medicine in Hershey, Pennsylvania, suggests young children with atypical eating behaviors may be a sign of autism. A few examples of what the researchers considered atypical eating behaviors include those such as a narrow preference for only certain foods, being sensitive to certain food textures or temperatures, and pocketing or stuffing the mouth with food without swallowing. The study authors found that 70% of children with autism who were studied displayed these atypical eating behaviors compared to about 5% of children who did not display signs of autism. Study author Susan Mays, a professor of psychiatry, says these behaviors are present in many one-year-olds with autism, and awareness of them could provide parents and doctors with a signal that a child may have autism. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Volunteer searchers found 12 skeletons and one decomposed body in a shallow pit in the desert near the Mexican resort of Puerto Peñasco. Prosecutors in the northern border state of Sonora said late Thursday that two of the bodies may be women. Tests are being conducted to determine the gender and identity of the bodies. Prosecutors said only one of the bodies was relatively recent. The others were complete skeletons with clothing. The European Union agreed to London's request for a Brexit deadline extension Friday, a spokeswoman for the EU executive said, but set no new departure date, giving time for Britain's bitterly divided parliament to decide on Prime Minister Boris Johnson's call for a snap election. Reuters' Francesca Lena reports.
Contingency plan.
Ambassadors for the 27 European Union countries have agreed to a Brexit extension in principle, but haven't set a new departure date.
The principle of an extension.
It would give time for Britain's bitterly divided parliament to decide on Prime Minister Boris Johnson's call for a snap election. British Finance Minister Sajid Javid.
We'll bring forward a motion on Monday to have this general election. And if Labour keeps its word, then they should be backing this call for a general election. And remember, this is already the first opposition in British history that has not wanted a general election. But if they don't back that call for a general election, then we will keep bringing a motion to Parliament for a general election. We'll keep going for it because we need that election, we need to get Brexit done, and we need the British people to decide.
If lawmakers fail to support a snap poll in a vote on Monday, Javid says that Britain's governing Conservatives will ask Parliament again and again until they yield.
And that was Reuters reporter Francesca Lena. Hong Kong's High Court on Friday banned people from disclosing personal information about the police and their families widely targeted in protests that have gripped the Chinese-ruled city for months, prompting concern among legal experts. To learn more, I spoke with VOA's Anita Powell.
Since the beginning of these protests, about 4 months ago, some 2,800 members of the police force have been doxxed, which means that their personal identification, their personal information has been not just shared, but propagated online, in a way to maybe intimidate them. And so this court order prevents that. This, of course, is going to stoke the ire of protesters who are already upset because a lot of the police who are on the streets are not wearing their identification at all times when they're in their full battle kit, by which I mean their protective face gear for tear gas and so on and so forth. So this is probably going to annoy protesters. But this is a small measure that should give those in the ranks of the police department, I guess, some insurance and some comfort, because this has been, they say, very hard for them to have their families being targeted, to be socially ostracized because of their role in law enforcement here.
What are, say, legal scholars saying about possible incursions on free speech as a result of this injunction?
Right. So that's the obvious concern of Beijing's interference, of a further throttling of what you can and cannot say online. So people are obviously upset about that. To them, this just represents sort of another brick in the wall of what Beijing is trying to build here in Hong Kong, which is, you know, very slowly, very quietly, making it harder and harder to express yourself fully. And this is part of that puzzle.
That's the legal aspect of what's taking place in Hong Kong on Friday. But as we move into the weekend, what is the mood there? What are people looking to do in this fifth month of ongoing protests?
What happened this week was that the poster boys for the last round of anti-government protests, that would be Joshua Wong, was informed that he was the only candidate among 1,000 people who was not cleared to run for local office. And he had said when he ran, or when he initially announced that he was going to run, he had said, if I am not allowed to run for office, this is just going to fan the flames of dissent. So he said that, and we'll see if he's right about that this weekend. And we'll see if people mobilize around that and act out on the street because of that. But the mood right now is really hard to gauge moment to moment. So what we've seen here in Hong Kong, especially on the weekdays, is when these groups gather to peacefully protest, as they have pretty much every day, it's very sudden. So you'll be standing in a square and there'll be nobody around. You'll say, I wonder if I got the right place. And all of a sudden, there are 1,000 people around you. And then just like that, once they're done, they disperse.
And that was VOA's Anita Powell speaking to me from Hong Kong. A video filmed by a Chilean resident who would like to remain anonymous for security reasons shows the moment when police officers opened fire with pellet guns to protesters with hands up in Santiago on Monday. It's just one flashpoint in escalating protests as the country prepares to host two major global summits. Reuters' Michelle Hennessy has that story.
A violent snapshot from Chile's protests might be hard for some to watch. A group of protesters sat in the street in the capital, chanting with their hands up. Then the police moved in. Chaos unfolded as police opened fire with pellet guns, and protesters fled. Chile has been grappling with days of violent protests. A move to hike up the cost of public transport has sparked a nationwide movement against inequality. Its capital is now under a state of emergency. The military has taken over security for the first time in decades, and an evening curfew has been in place since Saturday. Arson attacks and lootings have become increasingly common, and the death toll is rising. The manager of a hotel in Santiago recalls the moment a group stormed into his hotel.
About 60 guys walked in. 50 to 60 guys threatened to kill us, saying they were going to burn the hotel, that they were going to destroy everything, that they were going to burn all of us inside. We had to negotiate with some type of coordinator they had, so they would at least give us 20 minutes to evacuate the guests and staff.
This city is supposed to be hosting two major global meetings before the year's end. U.S. President Trump and other world leaders are expected to attend an APEC summit next month. But for now, the violence shows no signs of stopping.
And that was Reuters reporter Michelle Hennessy. The United Nations Human Rights Chief, Michelle Bachelet, is sending a three-member team to Chile to examine allegations related to security authorities' use of force and reported crimes by others. At least 18 people have died in turmoil that has swept Chile, where unrest began as a protest over an increase in subway fares and morphed into a larger movement, growing rapidly inequality. UN spokeswoman Ravina Shalamdrassi said the Chilean lawmakers had called for her office to send a mission, and the government also invited it. Michelle Bachelet is a former Chilean president. Animal rights activists say that Zimbabwe has sent about 30 young elephants to China, where they will be held in zoos. The Humane Society International said the elephants, estimated to be between 2 and 6 years old, were separated from maternal herds and held at Zimbabwe's Hwange National Park for nearly a year before being flown out this week. Fires have erupted in the northern and southern parts of the U.S. state of California, forcing the evacuation of at least 50,000 people. The wind-whipped blazes broke out Thursday in the Santa Clarita area, and the largest remained uncontained. In Northern California, a fire near the wine country town of Geyserville burned down 49 buildings. Pacific Gas and Electric, or PG&E, has shut down power to thousands of consumers in an effort to reduce the risk of fire. The utility company warned that more shutdowns are likely this weekend. Associated Press says the outages have affected close to 500,000 people. Cal Fire Battalion Chief Jonathan Cox told the AP that firefighters from both Northern and Southern California have been called in to help manage the Sonoma County fire.
Type 1 incident management team to actually manage this at the highest level of a disaster in California, and it's our number one priority in the state right now.
Cox also told the AP that the fires were not spreading as fast as they were on Wednesday. Speaking on KABC television, Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva says residents who are asked to evacuate should not ignore that request.
If the order comes down, please pay attention to the order. And we want people to evacuate safely in a timely manner so that way the fire department can devote their efforts to fighting fires instead of having to effect rescues.
The blaze in Sonoma County has burned 65 square kilometers. Forecasts for Saturday into Monday showed possible wind gusts of 64 to 97 kilometers per hour in most elevated areas of Northern California and as high as 120 kilometers per hour on some peaks. Sports can sometimes be a bridge for bitter divides between long-standing rivals. A similar unifying force could be at work, at least temporarily, in America's politically polarized capital city. VOA's Brian Patton reports that Democrats and Republicans are coming together to support the local team, the Washington Nationals.
In the nation's capital, thousands of Washington National fans of all political stripes came to watch parties in their home ballpark this week as their team won the first two games of a best-of-seven baseball championship series against the Houston Astros in Texas.
I think it just gives us something bigger to do and something bigger to focus on and gives us all something to be a part of and pay attention to and fall in love with all at once.
The Nationals' first-ever World Series appearance is a joyful spectacle in a city often consumed by bipartisan battles. Political tensions in the nation's capital are at an all-time high, with Democrats holding an impeachment inquiry of President Donald Trump and many Republicans crying foul.
Oh my God, he got him first!
In the midst of the acrimony, national fans are finding ample reason to root and cheer in unison, regardless of party affiliation.
I think it brings everyone together. Everyone with different political opinions, different other viewpoints in life.
Some fans hope a sense of unity sparked by the Nationals will reduce partisan strife in the city.
I think it will bring everybody together. It should. After the Nationals win, I think both parties should come together and be one.
Sports can open the door to political reconciliation. In 2016, relations between North and South Korea improved significantly after the two rivals participated together in the Pyeongchang Winter Olympics. Other national fans are less optimistic that a winning baseball team will lessen Washington's partisan divide.
Honestly, I don't think it'll last. I mean, it kind of ebbs and flows, you know? We're like at each other's necks for a while, and then something bonding happens.
Washington sports teams have been on a roll. The Washington Mystics professional female basketball team won its first ever title earlier this month. Last year, the Washington Capitals ice hockey team won its first Stanley Cup championship. Win or lose, the Nationals already are the toast of Washington, giving the city a welcome diversion when it needs it most. Brian Patton, VOA News, Washington.
And in that piece, you heard from Sharon Shway, Ali, Jeff Semin, and Edison Raleigh. And that's going to do it for me today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of producer Dan Brown, engineer Nick Ivanoff, and managing editor Kate Pound Dawson, thank you very much for joining us. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great weekend.